We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody, and welcome into the latest OBR Film Breakdown. I'm your host, Jake Burns, and we are here for a busy week of draft content. So we have a slew of shows coming out over the next few days before we get to the round one primer of the NFL draft. We have a fun, like I said, slate of discussion points and interviews, and what I am aiming to do with the next few days of content leading up to the actual draft is give you discussion points and conversations from people that have not normally been on this show in an attempt to expand our draft perspective. These are going to be deep dives, so if you're into that kind of thing, we will have a lot of deep dive-ish content on prospects and thought processes around selections, and then again, not just the early picks, but the later picks as well. Today, we will start with Pete Smith, who dropped his only mock draft on the OBR this morning, Monday morning. And so I want to spend some time with him and talk through his thought process around some picks you maybe haven't seen many other people make, right? And some selections that, again, I think are built on some deep prospect study. Does a great job. I'm not here to say this has been my best draft cycle on prospect study. I think I've looked at as many as time will allow, and that's why I'm really open to the idea, the banter, the discussion around some of these other selections that can be made and some of the other thought process around them. So that's what we're going to try to do. We have a Twitch YouTube show that we had on Monday night that I'm going to replay on the audio side and the podcast tomorrow as well. And then we'll get with Corey Kennan leading up to the draft. And then we'll do some fun Thursday morning round one, like prop bets and stuff like that, to make that event maybe more fun for those of you who tune into the show every day. So again, link to Pete's mock draft you will find in the description of this pod, and you will also find a link to the big board that he used to make his decision. So let's get over to that interview right now with Pete Smith, where we go through his one and only Cleveland Browns 2024 NFL mock draft. The OBR is proudly sponsored by Game Time Ticket App. When you're buying those tickets and it's the last minute, you don't have to be stressed out. You can go to gametime.co or use the Game Time app to make those last minute ticket decisions in the best possible way, with a fast and easy way to buy tickets for sports, music, comedy, and theater near you. The app does a fantastic job of finding opportunities near you for events, both, like I said, sports and otherwise. We have a comedy show that we found recently with the best price that we could possibly find using Game Time. Great seats. You can scout out the seats, have a great experience, and get the image of those seats all within the app or online, whatever you would like to do. So Game Time is the fast and easy place for those last-minute ticket deals. So take advantage, snag your tickets with Game Time, and avoid the stress. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the promo code OBR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create that account, use the promo code OBR, get $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last-minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. All right, we welcome in Pete Smith to the show. Pete is doing his mock, as I said before, doesn't do a wide variety of them, just pinpoints his guys, does study, figures out who he feels is best fit for the Browns for a number of different reasons. And I like the different perspective Pete brings to this. Obviously, he's been with us at the OBR for, I don't know, 4 months now, Pete. So we've been, you know, intermingling more on content than ever before. And I found the way you do mock drafts a little differently than everybody else is unique and definitely deserves attention, because I think it's, again, off the beaten path. And maybe players, you do those simulators. I've talked about this on the show. You get into this habit of picking players that are at the spots. You don't get perspective from many other players. So this is a different approach that I like. Can you talk everyone through a little bit of like how you're going about this, what your resource tool is for this, and why you think it's the best way to go about it?
So for me, the biggest thing, especially coming out of last year's draft with the way the Browns did it, I was like really happy with the way they used limited resources to get more bang for their buck. And what I mean by that is they focused a lot on premium positions, which is always good, because if you hit on any of those, they're just worth so much more. Like, use DeJuan Jones, for example. If he's as good as he showed as a rookie, that is a position that averages about $15 million per season on the open market. He's going to make $1.1 million in the second year of his contract. And he looks, we'll see where he is with the knee and everything, but he looks like a starting caliber tackle. So for a team that needs to start getting cheaper on the offensive line anyway, that's like a huge win for you. So the more of those guys you could do, attack it that way, the better. And particularly early in the draft. Like, the example I'll use is Cade York, even though it was in the fourth round. If you hit on Cade York, you're happy. You got a really good kicker on a rookie deal, and you're sitting there going, yeah, we got a really talented kicker. But the feeling of missing on that pick is awful, because you picked a position where, like, there anything else is worth more. Anything. Like, if you pick, you know, if you pick like a center or whatever, it's worth more. And then you compound that by saying, well, if you look back and you go, well, we could have had, you know, offensive tackle or a corner, a quarterback, for, you know, that's the terrifying one, where if you miss a quarterback in favor of a kicker, it just hurts so much more. So that's part of it. And then you get into sort of the stuff that, like, just suggests success at the next level. Production at the collegiate level. Like, some of this stuff sounds really basic, and yet teams get away from it all the time. Guys who are really productive in college are more likely to be really productive in the NFL. You are risking by saying that, no, college was wrong. This player is going to be better in the NFL, because it doesn't make sense. The competition should be much higher in the NFL. And that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. There are guys where you can point to and go, ha, this worked perfectly. Terry McLaurin is a perfect example. Did basically nothing at Ohio State, and then goes in the NFL and he's great. He was also older than the average player too, which also flies in the face of that. Which brings me to the next thing, which is age. Let's take it on the most basic level. If an 8-year-old is playing against 11 and 12-year-olds and crushing it, you probably think that kid's pretty good. In the same way that if a guy is 20 or 21 and he's dominating or playing at a really high level against a field where you could have 23-year-old players, like, that suggests that they are going to be really good. And what makes that more interesting is, like, we're getting into this whole, the tail end of COVID and a little bit of an impact on NFL. I think it's a little overstated, but nevertheless. So yeah, there's this feeling of, well, of course the Browns should draft older because there's just more older players. Conversely, the opposite's also true, where if you get a 20-year-old player who's dominating against 24 and 25-year-old college prospects because they've stayed in that much longer, that would highlight them even further than anything else. And then the last bit is athleticism. I mean, football is a game of athletics. Having more athleticism inherently is an advantage for you. None of these things guarantee success, but what we're always trying to do is try to find as many ways to avoid failure as possible. And there are outliers. There are guys who will overperform and everything. And there, you know, you can do it right and miss spectacularly. Like, because the analogy I use with this is baseball. And what I'm hoping to happen is at every pick, the Browns hit the ball really hard with their at bat. They have gotten a younger player who's really productive, really athletic, and is at a premium position. Like, if you can get all those things, great. And it doesn't mean you can't take a running back, for example, because we've seen this. JOK, Grant Delpit, and Nick Chubb are not ideal picks relative to the position, but they crushed everything else. Like, you still have to, you shouldn't pass on a player you love at maybe a suboptimal position for a player you're sort of like, I don't know if he's going to be good or not, just because he plays that premium position. So you have to balance these things out. But last year, the Browns, to me, based on my evaluation, hit the ball hard 6 out of 7 times. The one that I felt like they didn't hit hard was Siaki Ika. And what I would say at that point is, like, you can hit the ball really hard and right at fielders and get, you know, obviously get out. Meanwhile, you can get a poor contact on, using Siaki Ika as an example, and hit a bloop single or even, you know, just muscle the ball out of the park. And, you know,
Ika turning into a bloop single at this point would be such a win. Right now we're looking at like an infield pop-up, but yeah, nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's why this stuff becomes important. But, like, if you are, you know, and if you're just saying on one particular pick, you're always going to be like, no, give me the bloop single over the hard hit out. And I can sort of, I get it. But what we're trying to do is, Andrew Berry's going to be here for a minute. Like, he's already been here. This could be his 5th draft. What we want is, over the course of, you know, years, that he's consistently doing this over and over again. And there are going to be times where he could go 0-for-4, you know, and not, you know, hit the ball really hard and it just doesn't work for him. But what we want to see happen and what we believe will happen is, if he keeps doing this, that he's going to start having a great night where suddenly he's 3-for-4 and 3 of those things went out of the park. Like, those are the things we want to try to do with this in terms of draft process, at least from my evaluation standpoint.
I think the comparison there is well said, especially considering baseball, which is trying to do sort of something similar in a weird sense to the draft, which is, you know, doing 9/10 of the job correctly. But there's that other part of it in a sense of, like, where defenders are standing and catching the line drive that you hit, versus us in the draft evaluation process having things we don't know. We don't get to interview all of these guys. Right. We don't know who they are as people. So there's parts of this equation you don't know. So you're trying to get, of 10 different layers, as many of those layers to be as net positive as you possibly can. So that thought process makes a ton of sense to me. That's why we talk about relative athletic scores. That's why we talk about production scores. That, again, is why we talk about looking at tape as a part of the evaluation process too, right? So I think all of that is in line. I think that how you're going about drafting these guys, Pete, and again, I will link in the bio of this pod the big board that Pete used here, which comes from Wide Left Football. I think it's a collection of 75 draft evaluators, I think, Pete, is the way to say this. Where
it's been added more. But yes, I mean, Arif Hassan's been doing this for years, where he just gets as many boards as he can get from all kinds of draft evaluators. And you can go back. I don't know how many years he's been doing this, but you can go back and see, like, whose board worked out the best for a particular year, or even just over the course of time, whose board has sort of been, whose set of boards has been more representative of success in the NFL. So it's, you know, there's no perfect way to do this, obviously, and it's really difficult. So without having a first round pick, that's part of the reason I did it this way. And the other part is, I really like Andrew Berry. But I have no confidence that we're picking at 54. So why am I going to spend, you know, hours and hours and hours thinking about, well, what could happen at 54 when, if things go a certain way, he's going to trade out one way or the other. So to try to eliminate that, and, like, I love the simulators. Don't get me wrong. They're entertaining. I can waste all kinds of time on them. But your inherent bias, both in, you can sort of make the simulator do what you want to a certain extent, and a lot of those things are really bad when it comes to trading. Like, you are highly incentivized to trade every time because they will give you just gobs of picks and you look great. But, like, for our purposes, it doesn't really help us discuss the draft in a way that's going to be, like, useful for you. Like, if I come out of this draft and I go, hey, look, I got a second and third round pick next year, and I got 15 guys that are all really good on my board because the board let me do this. Like, cool, but not helpful. So
yeah,
this gave us a very firm, I can't cheat it. It, you know, the board is as it lies, and I just wanted to go with that. There's no trades, no anything, just this is what the consensus board looks at. And based on that, I've got 54th pick, I've got 85th pick, so on and so forth. And I can't take anyone that is lower than the pick or higher, I guess, ranked than the pick I have. So that's how I got to where I got.
Let's go through how you got there. So pick 54, like the first name that comes up at 54 is Junior Colson. And then it works its way down. A lot of familiar names. You know, you're talking about two running backs following him, Trey Benson, Jonathan Brooks, Mike Sainer still, the nickel corner there from Michigan, Jatavion Sanders, Christian Haynes, a guard everybody seems to be very into. Patrick Paul thinks he's a first-round pick all of a sudden, the tackle from Houston. If you ask him the question, he's going high. Guy like Marshawn Nealon, a name that shot up the board a little bit there. So talk us through, and listen, we know, you know, Mike Hall is a guy that you don't want to draft necessarily because of your connection to him in Streetsboro and all that. Totally understood. Where if you didn't have the connection, Pete, and you didn't feel like there was a little bit of nepotism there, do you feel like that's the guy you would go with, or who did you go with here? And talk us through why you went that direction.
I probably still lean Sanders just because he's got more. I'm big on evidence. He's got more evidence that suggests he's going to be great. Like I will tell you. You know, Mike, in terms of athleticism, he's phenomenal. In terms of like tape, you can watch it and you go, it's very easy to plug him into Jim Schwartz's system. You're like, this is an easy fit. He does everything Maurice Hurst does, except he's 20. And then you get into sort of the like efficiency data, like how well he rushes the passer relative to snaps and how many tackles he makes relative to snaps. Those are sky high. But he also has relatively low production overall. And like there is at least an inherent risk with taking him. Now, like that is where I want to take myself out of the process and not be like, I believe in Mike. I'm going to say he's going to be great despite all these things. I want to try to be as honest as I can. And even if you turn on the tape, like I'll tell you, he looked phenomenal against Michigan. And, you know, to my earlier point, he's 20 and I'm fairly sure all of Michigan's offensive linemen in that game were 35 years old. So that makes him automatic superstar, clearly. Right. So look, that's, I tried to take myself out of this as much as possible with him. I'm a fan. I've known the kid for 6 years. I'm very familiar with everything that's going on. So to eliminate that, other guys that are sort of in the conversation to me, you can make a case for Rook Ororo from Clemson. Certainly athletic, certainly fits a lot of the things that Jim Schwartz wants. There's some holes there. There's some question marks there, but he's talented. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a Patrick Paul guy for reasons that have come down to, I think he's DeJuan Jones, but older and with more weaknesses in pass protection. I'm very concerned about how he deals with guys who convert speed to power and get under him.
Some premium position wide receivers that I do just have to quickly ask you about. Jalen Polk is there. Malachi Corley is there. Jalen McMillan, Washington, the third name from Washington's there. And this is just running up to pick 85. Tez Walker also there. So that's sort of just the wide receiver crew you had to pick from at that spot.
Right. So Malachi Corley, it wouldn't surprise me if the Browns take him just because for as long as he's been here and dating back to his time in Minnesota, it always feels like Kevin Stefanski has a Cordarrelle Patterson itch he would like to scratch. And Malachi Corley is sort of the guy that you look at and you go, he can do a lot of the Patterson things where I don't think you treat him like a wide receiver in the traditional way. I think you treat him sort of like the Chiefs treat Kadarius Toney, for example. He's not a polished receiver. And I don't know what the learning curve is for him at that position because he just doesn't run routes really. He looks really clunky and awkward. They just give him the ball and he does stuff. It's tough for me to sort of justify that as wide receiver 5 in the second round to be like, I don't know what this guy does. Now, the Browns or whoever might go, nope, we have a plan for him. We know exactly what he's going to do. And like his production is fantastic. I also was sort of nonplussed by his athletic testing. I was expecting more out of him from there. So that was concerning with him. I like Jalen Polk quite a bit. I just don't know if I love him enough. again, part of this comes down to depth chart. I think Jalen Polk attacks the ball really well. Production is fine.
Yeah.
It's not great.
He blocks his butt off too. There's some Tillman to how he goes about some things. So that's a little tricky. And I know you've talked about this a little bit in the lead up to the process, which is like, the wide receiver room is pretty packed. I mean, you can love a guy, you can take a guy, but it's like, you are running some of those risks of like, how do guys get the time? How do you just stop a guy like Cedric Tillman's development? Like the decisions of some of these positions, Pete, have ramifications on what you are getting from some guys you have brought in recently.
Yeah. And I'll just say Jalen McMillan is a slot. Like, this team cannot have any more slots. There's no room. There's nowhere to put. We have too many guys that just are literally going to only operate from that part of the field. If they get another receiver, it's got to be somebody who can operate on the boundary at least a lot of the time. But to your point, like, I don't think people sort of appreciate how unsatisfied they will feel if the Browns take a wide receiver at 54 and they are on the depth chart entering the season and they're wide receiver 4 or 5 and they are basically rarely on the field. Like,
yeah, they might get 30 targets for the year. And that's not a meaning that guy can't play. It's just meaning they have NFL dudes ready to go at that position.
And if that could happen, it could be the right pick. Like, they could absolutely crush that pick and you're still sitting there going, this sucks. Like, there is that sort of element. And I'm not saying the Browns will operate that way. I think Andrew Berry will say, no, I'm going to take the guy who's, because he keeps talking about this and people insist on not believing him. He's worried about long-term. He wants the guys who are going to be great in 25 through 27. He's not so much worried about that. So for him, he may be looking for a guy who's going to sort of, whatever they plan to do with Amari Cooper, if they extend him or not, if they plan on letting a guy like Elijah Moore walk, they may have a plan for this guy, but like, it's a little unsatisfying. And part of the reason I went with Jatavion Sanders is I think it scratches a lot of itches in that regard. Jatavion Sanders obviously becomes tight end two, which is a hole. An elite tight end, if he can reach that level, is worth an insane amount. It pairs him with a guy who's obviously figured it out, and David Njoku, who's very, very good. But it also gives you sort of that jumbo receiver look. Like, it's a receiver who's 245 pounds. His production is outstanding. And within that production, this last season, he dominated against the best teams he faced on the schedule. Alabama, Washington, Texas, or who would they play? Oklahoma State in the Big 12 title or whatever it was. He crushed all those teams. He had over 100 yards against Alabama. He came up big when they needed him to come up big. He has a really very natural feel for how to catch passes. I think he makes difficult passes look easy in a way that David Njoku has always sort of done the opposite, where I love what Njoku can do, but there are times where he makes passes look way more difficult than they need to be in terms of catching passes. But he just has a natural
football
feel.
A little bit. Yeah. He fights a football a little bit.
Jatavion Sanders, no drops this past year. And it's not to say like he was conservative. He went for every ball. He went for balls with one hand and caught the BYU catch is obviously the catch for him. If you're sitting there to pick out one highlight, one-handed catch where he immediately gets hit, gets up, and just shakes his hand at the guy and walks back to the huddle. He has a real – I like the route tree they run with him in terms of crossers, in terms of some of the vertical stuff. He can sell a screen. He does a lot of things really well. The questions for him are athletic testing. The bench press is terrifying. There's no getting around. I think at one point we thought it was 10. It turns out it was 8 reps at 240-some pounds. Now –
I thought there had to be an injury or something on that because he doesn't play that week.
No, and that's the question. And I do think he's probably stronger in his lower half than he is in his upper half, and he can't block at all. Like, he's terrible. He just gets in the way for the most part of guys right now. And they put him in line. They put him in the backfield, the lead block, and it's not like he's turning it down. He's just not strong enough at this point, and that's going to be a project. But you're okay with that if he can play and if he can do these things. And I think Jatavion Sanders' draft stock will probably ultimately be determined by the athletic tracking that teams are able to get that we don't have access to. Like, if he's a 4.69 athlete, that's fine. Obviously, if he's faster than that, that'd be great. But it's at least something to consider. But part of the reason I like him, and I sort of considered this in the discussion, was like, Isaiah Likely ran a 4.8 and is crushing it. Like, Dalton Kincaid did not test anything. And I don't think he's faster than Jadeveon Sanders. He may be a little more agile, perhaps, but I don't think he's like, you're sitting there going, no, Dalton Kincaid is an elite athlete and everything else in a way that Sanders can't be. So I think the Likely effect is real. One for one, having a potentially dominant tight end in Njoku and then being able to double up with another 245 pound guy that, like, defenses just don't have enough people to cover these guys. And Kevin Stefanski loves the ability of going from big people to little fast people and mixing and matching to cause stress on defenses. And Sanders gives you that. But to me, I think in some ways, Jadeveon Sanders, you're getting Jadeveon Sanders a year early, which is okay for the Browns, because right now we're looking at a roster where, you know, Amari Cooper, Jerry Jeudy, David Njoku, Elijah Moore, Cedric Tillman are all going to be parts in the offense, which doesn't even talk about the running backs in terms of getting passes and everything else. You are putting Sanders in a situation where you're only going to put him on the field to do things he's very good at or feels very comfortable at. And that allows him to just thrive initially and potentially create some offense. And those are reasons why I can look past some of the issues. And ultimately, even if I say he's exactly what the athlete he is, his potential is still very, very high. He can still become a Pro Bowl type tight end in the league and be a tremendous player. So even if you hold all of the things against him, I still come out with him being a very, very good prospect.
Who's the name you considered most otherwise in that spot?
Probably Mike. I mean, like, here's a situation where I would love to trade down, you know, right. But given I can't, so it was pretty easy. Cause, like, for the longest time I've been saying that, like, the Browns have three targets where I think they will run the card up, which are Troy Franklin, Kingsley Suamataya, and then Jadeveon Sanders. Mike might be in that list, but those are the three I feel the best about. And he was there, so it became pretty easy.
Got it. Roger that. All right, 85. Here's who's best available on this board at 85. Mason Smith, a name that's caught a lot of smoke lately. The LSU defensive tackle. Austin Booker, Kansas edge, who's interesting. Ben Sennett, the tight end from Kansas State. Blake Fisher, Notre Dame tackle. Jermaine Burton, often discussed Alabama wide receiver. Marshawn Lloyd, the USC running back, kind of at the top of that group at 85. Probably don't need to go deeper than that. So, yeah, talk us through who you took at 85, Pete, and who you considered closely for this one as well.
Yeah, so Ben Sinnott's fun. Obviously, I just took a tight end. And the only concern I have with Ben Sinnott is his height. Like, and you sit there and you go, why do you care that much about height? Well, because he's not an inline tight end. To me, honestly, the guy I continue to come back to with him is I think he's a taller version of Kyle Juszczyk, which is great, but you have to have a plan for that. Nevertheless, like, the reason I think of Juszczyk is because Kansas State's offense was, we have nothing except this guy who's an H-back. We're going to figure out every possible way to get him the ball, line him up everywhere we can, and just figure it out. And he was good. Like, he's really impressive. But, like, it's difficult when you can't put that guy in line. It's not to say that it's the end of the world that he's just a wing and a space player and all these other things you can do with him. But you have to have a plan for that. And obviously, I'd already taken a tight end. Jermaine Burton, I can't. Like, I don't have enough information, for one. Even if I eliminate the off-field considerations and the inevitable B-roll that's going to follow him around with striking a woman on camera, his production, like, his tape is phenomenal. Like, if you watch him, you are stunned at how well he plays the ball and some of the things he can do, but he still wasn't that productive despite all that. And you're sitting there wondering, why wasn't he that productive anywhere he's been? And he's been at six schools in 8 years. Like, that does not bode well for him making through the whole rookie contract.
Right.
And then the last element with him is Tommy Rees is in the building. One way or the other, the Browns are going to have a very well-informed opinion of Jermaine Burton. Marshawn Lloyd, he's a lot of fun. He fumbles the ball a lot. He's also a part-time player, which is the problem with a lot of these running backs, particularly early. If he's sitting there in round five, sign me up. You know, if you had a fourth round pick, you can talk me into it, but it's too early for him here. You know, Chris Abrams drain, some of those other guys are really interesting. I like Javon Baker, but ultimately for me, it was Blake Fisher. I'm a big fan of Blake Fisher. He has all the tools to be successful in my view. Very explosive athlete, which is super important for what the Browns seem to want to do. And he's had experience playing it for a very good program in terms of developing offensive line. He's been asked to do a lot of things and he's excelled at it. Prototypical height, prototypical arm length, prototypical everything from that standpoint. Questions, agility, hip tightness. You can see it on tape. You can see some of the things he does where it's not quite there yet. But everything to me with Blake Fisher is not a matter of he can't do it. He just needs to do it more consistently. And that's fine for me in the third round. He's 21. And in fact, he was going to be the left tackle. He beat Joe Alt for the left tackle job as a freshman and then suffered a torn meniscus. And then Joe Alt got the job and never let up. And that's why Blake Fisher went to right tackle. But like, there's a ton of ability. I also put a little bit of stock in the fact he's working with Duke Manyweather. That is certainly helpful. But like, I look at with a lot of these offensive linemen, I look at it as the Browns don't need him to be ready this year. Correct. And I think people underestimate just how quick, you know, how long the NFL draft for how long the NFL draft process is, how quick it is to go from draft to regular season. It's like 3 months. And that's, you know, it's really four, but like one of those months is literally summer vacation where you might be working with a private coach or something and doing certain things, but you're not practicing and working with your team in the same way. So like, it's a quick turnaround, but add a year to that, get him an off season, get, you know, time to really work with the offensive coaching staff. And for guys like him who played so quickly, it hopefully allows them to sort of step back and really hammer out some of those details. And he's got to block Myles Garrett in practice. He's got to block Z. Yeah. There's no shortage of guys where he's going to have to prove it. So I like what the Browns have to offer these rookie offensive linemen, and getting a guy with that much talent to me feels like an easy no brainer to go ahead and throw in to run the card up.
Well, and I think too, you're not necessarily taking guys to punt on the first year of their rookie deal or them as players. Like, you're obviously not drafting Blake Fisher to redshirt him. It's just an option you have built in because of the position you're in roster development wise, that is something you can use to your advantage. If he's good enough, he comes in, plays really well. It's not like they're going to be afraid to put him on the foot, but like the Browns are trying to find their tackles of the future here. They'll play him. There's no doubt. They'll play him if someone's not meeting the standard. So like, we do talk about how this is a long game and you're looking at 25, and that's just something I kind of want to, you know, sort of point out that, you know, these guys aren't forced to play right away, but if they are so good that you can't keep them off the field, they'll play them, you know, they'll play them. So
earned it.
Exactly right. Yeah. You find your way on the field. If they believe in you enough, hell, they'll trade somebody stopping you from getting on the field in order to try to rectify that stuff. So that's what it is. But the good thing is, and you're illuminating it there, and I've talked with Andrew about it on this stuff, is like, you know, you're not drafting for issues anymore. You're not drafting because we need somebody at that spot right away. It's a different element to what we're doing. So the frame of mind shifts a little bit. We're going to take a break, come back from break, and then run through Pete's last several picks here and get out the door. But stick around. There's some good stuff on some back end of the draft prospects starting at 156. So we'll be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a lowly podcaster like me, the world is starting to understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. The NFL has been placing a larger emphasis in this area, especially that mental well-being. The Browns are leading the charge in this as well, trying to get their players to the right physical and mental peak every day, and that's what Unified Healing System is trying to do, and they're a proud sponsor of the OBR Film Breakdown. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or EE Systems. If you haven't heard of EE Systems yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in Cleveland or Columbus like me, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/OBR. Again, that's unified with a YD, unifiedhealing.com/OBR, to learn more and find a center near you. A reminder, no material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including the EE system. All right, so we don't necessarily go off the top 100. Now you're switching your frame of mind a little bit to just guys in the range, or what's your thought process for 156 and the guys in the 200?
I still try to apply the same principles as much as I can, but like it changes a little bit in terms of if that's not there, then what does it look like? And there is a small, very small component of, is this guy going to really have a chance to make the team? Like, for example, one guy who's on the board where I'm picking in the fifth round, Jalix Hunt, is incredibly fun. Like if you've watched this kid, freaky athlete, but you have to ask yourself, what do I feel like the chances are that he's actually going to make the team? And if you feel like he can beat out Isaiah McGuire, and maybe we trade Alex Wright or something like that, so be it. But like, I don't want to like burn a pick just because I really like a prospect, because if I don't feel like there's a path for him, because he's never going to make the practice squad. You're trading him for some awful value or something like that. So there's a small component of keeping that in mind. But like, as much as we can, we just got to keep hammering the same process and then flesh it out a little bit where there you can stray a little bit, but you still want to hit on more of those things. And this is also a part of the draft where I think If the Browns had a fourth round pick, this would also apply, because I think DeJuan Jones was a phenomenal example of this. Proper risk assessment. The Browns have an awful track record with this in the past. Perrion Winfrey was a horrific bet. He was athletic. He had the size, but he wasn't productive. His tape was horrendous. And then you have all the off-field stuff. So, like, let's take away the off-field stuff and pretend they don't exist. He still has to overcome these other real problems just to justify the pick. Compare that to DeJuan Jones, where DeJuan Jones has 2 years of dominant film at Ohio State. He He tested really well. People look at the 370 some pounds running. What was it? 5.36 or whatever at that size is insane. Mm-hmm. He's basically moving a planet. So then you get into like, the tape is good. All these things are good. So what's the problem? Well, he didn't get arrested. There's no like awful, you know, situation that they've got to delve into. The concern was maybe he likes basketball more than football. Maybe he's in this for the money, which surprised a lot of people are in this for the money. Professional football is really hard and not everybody loves it the way you want them to love it, but they'll do what they can because they know it's profitable. Like they will work hard for that. But there are guys who will do everything they need to do, but may treat it like you, a lot of people treat their own job. Like you leave for your 9 to 5 and you're like, yeah, I'm done for the day. I'm good. I don't need to like, this isn't my life. And you can live with that. So like part of the reason you were willing to take DeJuan Jones was like, one, if money's his thing, he's still got to crush it for 4 years to get to the payday. And then we'll deal with that when we get there. But like, that was a really good assessment of risk, because if he failed miserably, he ate himself out of the league because he's so big, or he decided, nope, I just don't love football. You're out of fourth round pick. And it's the same you lose for Perrion Winfrey. But like, if he's good, and there were far more reasons to believe he is good, then he's going to easily outperform the fourth round pick.
Right. Right. I love that. So let's, there's not, I mean, we can go through the names around 150, 154 here, like Isaac Arendo and some of the others. We're in the weeds a little bit with some of these that people will know just kind of casually listening. So let's just quickly hit on the guys you selected and talk through why you liked them. So another corner you liked at Mississippi State, right?
Yes. DeCamrion Richardson. Have you watched this kid?
Yeah, I have selected him in a few, and obviously we dove in a little deeper. I think all of us did when we saw the Browns bring him in, and his traits are fun. Traits are fun.
Did you immediately get Greedy Williams cover three vibes? Yes. Yeah. He so DeCamrion Richardson is a freak athlete. Like his movement skills are out of this world. 4.3 speed. His agility is uncanny, and it looks it on tape. Like he can not only run fast in a straight line, and he will track dudes down and hawk them from very far away. But even just like him turning around and flipping his hips is
seamless,
incredibly smooth. It's easy for him. And he's 6'2", and he's 188 pounds. It's not like he's super light. And, you know, for the Browns, like to me, this is an easy hit. I don't think he's going to last this long just by the physical ability alone. I think he's going to be picked much, much earlier, but the board is what it is. And for a team that wants to run endless man coverage and have guys who can run press man, this is the prototype. The issue for any tackles, like he puts dudes on the ground. It's not always pretty. Some of it looks just downright sloppy, but he puts dudes on the ground. In coverage, he gives up some plays he shouldn't. There are plays where he just doesn't finish. But the bigger issue is he sort of got that, for people who remember Greedy Williams, and when the Browns were playing sort of off man and cover three looks, Greedy Williams was super conservative when it came to having a guy sort of push him back. And Greedy Williams was never good at just sticking his foot in the ground, planting and driving on the football. Now he'd give, so in with Greedy Williams, he'd just give up first downs doing that. DeCamrion's a little bit better when it comes to tackling the ball shorter than that. But he has a little bit of that where he hesitates and he's not as aggressive. Now, for the Browns, I'm fine with it because in a perfect world, I'm going to have him press every single play. And even if he gets beat, he may be fast enough to recover on some of those and stop the play. But if you can get him to sort of trust his athleticism on some of these and drive down on the ball, he's going to be pretty good. And for the fifth round, I'm fine with that because the situation the Browns have to sort of look out for. I know a lot of people are trying to get like shove Greg Newsome out the door. I'm not one of those people, but there are plenty who do. And you sit there and you look at, well, Cam Sutton can step in and play slot corner and be like, that's great. One, I want him to prove that. But two, even if that's true, one of the things that Greg Newsome provides for you is the four games that Denzel Ward will miss a year, plus, you know, if we have another issue on the other side with Martin Emerson, Greg Newsome could immediately jump out to the boundary and you had a guy and you were covered. Like you may not have been thrilled with it, but like your defense was good. You were still in a place to be okay. The right. Browns, if Greg Newsom's out the door, you have to solve that problem now. What happens when Denzel Ward is out with for four games? To me, I think a guy like, you know, maybe Khalif Halasi is going to be that dude, but I'd rather get another option in there. Again, elite movement skills, and see if this kid can figure it out, because I don't need him to be a superstar to do that role. But if he performs better than that, you're going to be thrilled with him. And like I said, perfect scheme fit. He's not for everybody, but he's definitely a guy. It's very easy to see why the Browns were like, we have to talk to this kid.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. If you're keeping all those options open, even if you only have one more year and you want to figure out something, you know, build around moving around pieces in the cornerback room, it's just too good a player to pass on. If he's there like you, I think that the traits, physical size, athleticism stuff means he's just hard to see that player there at 150. All right, we get into the 200s. Go ahead with your next one, which I think is another offensive tackle type, but maybe a guy who can move a little bit.
Yeah. Here's another guy. I don't know that he's going to last this long, but I'm perfectly happy for it. Now, some of this is projection. We got to figure out what the Browns really want to do with their offensive line moving forward. You know, there's part of me that thinks they want to go bigger gap scheme stuff and get heavier guys that are going to be able to really handle those duo blocks and be able to do some of those things. Nathan Thomas is 330 pounds, tested really well for speed athlete for his size. I think he was like 4 or 5 1 somethings at that size. Like, he can move. So if you want him to handle double teams, he's pretty good for that. He's fast enough where if you want him to pull, he can do that. He does have some issues with agility and balance. So he can, one, he plays too tall. And two, when he gets going so fast, it's almost like he loses control and has difficult sort of controlling himself in space. But his power on tape is obvious. He's very, very strong to the point where he almost never has proper leverage and still just bullies dudes out the way. That's part of the problem. And he, to me, I think he has to kick inside to guard. I think that's where he's going to be best suited, and probably right guard, which may or may not be ideal given timelines, but nevertheless, super strong at the point of attack and just is that earth moving type right guard where if the Browns really want to just double guys and move dudes off the ball, that's great. He's got to get better at playing at with a lower pad level. And I see a little bit of the Jedrick Wills sort of content to just do his thing and move on. Like, in the sixth round, I'm okay with that. If you can hopefully instill that sort of professional on-field ethic, because when he explodes on people, like, he can do some damage, but I want to see more of that. And this is a spot where I feel like you're comfortable taking that type of gamble with him, because the payoff could be substantial, but just more power up front.
I feel like they definitely know they have to get cheaper there. So I don't know. It definitely is a dangerous word. I want to believe that they're going to continue to dump assets into figuring out cheaper routes for offensive line as skill guys are going to get more expensive, creating pathways to this. So there's going to be tough decisions. I do think the way you're talking about two names in your draft, the name likelihood there at 85, even 54, like, it just makes sense to try to find rookie contracts here, Pete, to alleviate some of the stress of the cap that you have invested into your offensive line over the years. It's an inevitable fact to me.
Yeah. They've got four decisions to make and one guy to make them with. Like, we need more dudes. And there's an argument people keep presenting. Well, wait till next year. I do not want to have to put rookies in offensive line positions in the NFL. If you watch college or high school or anything else, the more you watch, the more you see that, like, guys are not being asked to block for a long time. Everybody's scheming around the line because the athletes on the other side of the ball are just too good. Like, and we see it every year, freaky athletes coming to the league that rush the passer. So you can either try to block them, which may not go well for you, or you're reading them, or you're just getting the ball out fast enough, you're trying to negate their impact. And that's great because you're trying to win games at those levels, but it's not great in terms of developing an offensive line alignment for the league. And yes, DeJuan Jones is like it's miraculous that he was able to play as well as he was. Like, I hope people don't come away with thinking, well, that's just how it works. You can just take a guy and he'll be good in the 3 months with no problem.
People have to remember, Pete, he's so far from finished. Like, he is
doesn't run
sloppy in the run game, was going the wrong direction at times. Like, there's, you know, everybody wants, listen, you said it earlier with fixing the tight ends, fixing a guy as a pass catcher is something you can't do as well as fixing them as a run blocker. You can work with DeJuan to just let his physical mass take care of like 90% of run blocking. It'll work itself out in a more likely manner than if he couldn't pass block. So coming in and being an effective pass blocker at his size is meaningful. But I think sometimes we let the idea that he had great moments as a pass blocker sort of mask the fact that he was an incomplete right tackle still. So there is a world in which you have to see him get better to kind of be of the type of player that you think he can become, because it's just an incomplete situation right now. And this is speaking to what you get from rookie offensive linemen. And people think if a guy doesn't let up very many sacks, that's success. And there's merit in that. I get it. But like, you do have to do all of the things well in order for the Browns to offensively remain efficient. So I think he's just a great example of that was a great outcome with a mid-round rookie offensive lineman. You don't find solutions there the way you would love to find them that often. So yeah, it's just kind of a reminder point there that I think you're making. I want to echo.
So I don't want to be in a situation where Jedrick Wills walks out the door, Joel Bitonio retires, he has another injury-plagued season, goes, I just can't do it. And then you still, and you're trying to replace the left side of the line at once. And then you still have to also come up with a solution potentially for Wyatt Teller. Unless you're planning to, unless the Browns have already decided, and a lot could happen between now and when his contract ends up in 2 years, that they may need another guard for him. Because obviously, like we've mentioned, it's all about reducing cost. They're shifting their cost burden. They wanted to put it in the skill, not in the line. And this is an opportunity for them to do that. I want Andy Dickerson and Ray Ishtvan to have all the chance in the world to get these guys ready, because we don't want to be in a situation as we are dealing with right now. Deshaun Watson is a $230 million quarterback who's coming off a broken shoulder. Let's not do this again and go, hey, we'll figure it out when we get there. Like, you have that has to be, if it's not the top priority, it has to be damn near, because they can't have this happen again where the quarterback's missing that much time. So start dealing with it now. If it doesn't work this year, you can go back and get more, but like, you can't sit around and do nothing this year.
Pick 227, running back out of Alabama for you. Talk about Jace McClellan and why you think that fit makes sense. And I know it's going to tie into Tommy Rees a little bit here, but there's a player here that can do some things and have a chance to make this roster.
Yes, I'd like it on record that everybody at the OBR has stolen Jace McClellan from me, even though I've been singing his praises for a while. And
I'm not fine. Guilty on that one. No. There have been others.
No, there are others. Not guilty. look, Jace McClellan might be one of the more fun running backs to watch in this class, because you just watch him and he just does things correctly. Like, he understands how to sort of set up his runs. He understands how to fight through contact and like finish. He churns his legs through contact. He's got his pads going forward. He's got enough juice where he can surprise people with just how quick he is. He's a really, you play with Jahmyr Gibbs and it's like, oh, he looks very ordinary as a pass catcher because Jahmyr Gibbs is a stud. But Jace McClellan does a lot of things where I think he can be a quarterback's best friend. He does such a good job of getting himself in the vision line of the quarterback and positioning himself in a spot where he can catch the ball and run. So he's got like a really high average after the catch. He's got really good hands. He's run routes. Certainly there's an element where Tommy Rees was an offensive coordinator. The RPOs that they may want to install, Jace McClellan is certainly comfortable in doing that. Now, one of the problems potentially with Jace McClellan is because they do so much that involves a mesh, his pass blocking is not great. And maybe the Browns are content with doing that. I know Deshaun Watson is not a guy who loves having a lot of guys in the backfield because he wants to move around and be able to extend plays. He'd rather just have receivers. And McClellan's got to get better at that part of the game. The other thing is his athleticism is not great. I don't think he has a special trait athletically, but you play against the SEC, you're productive against the SEC, and you've seen right. backs come out of this conference where they're like sort of ordinary and you just sort of, you know, you don't really think of them highly. And then they just sort of hang around in the NFL for 5 years and have productive careers. Yeah. Like there are a lot of those guys. And I think McClellan's got a chance to be the one of those guys.
You watch him. You don't, I mean, I've never watched him and thought he's an elite athlete, but there are times where he can erase some angles. He plays faster than that 40 time would tell you. And if you're taking him, you definitely feel like you've got some GPS data that would help. And, you know, you got to think too about that run against Michigan on that little tight zone where he put, I can't remember which Michigan DB, he kind of put in a little 1-2 plant blender before he took off up the right sideline. Like he can make people miss in tight spaces as well. And every year, man, Kyren Williams types like that are just at the back end of drafts yeah. that don't test well, but you're like, man, when he gets on the field, he moves fairly efficiently for what you thought he might be. So I am fine with the swing. I know you and I both love Kamani Vidal as well. Like there's some guys back here that you can take, and Jace is definitely in that group. Last pick, you have a safety you want to move down into the second level a little bit, right?
Jalon Carlees. He's like 6'2 and 3/4 and 227 pounds, and he was playing free. He's like Taylor Mays back there, but not quite as athletic. And he just looked sort of lost in space out there. But he likes to hit people, and he's fast. Like Jim Schwartz seemingly is making a point to get guys who have more range than they've had. They move on from Anthony Walker, and obviously Anthony Walker's made a point that he wanted to go home. He was tired of being cold, and more power to him. Sione Takitaki goes to New England. I'm thrilled for him. But there was an element to this of, particularly with misdirection, where the Browns would get fooled one way, and those guys never had a chance to make it back. Jordan Hicks is not a blazer, but he's got a little bit more range than those guys. They bring in the former Steelers linebacker who at least can run fast in a straight line since the knee surgery. And then him, Jalon Carlees, is, you know, practically a linebacker size already. I think at worst, you at least look at him in sort of that D'Anthony Bell type role where he's in the box plus 15 pounds with enough speed. He can blitz. He's a guy who can hit. He needs to be a little bit more consistent in just tackling. He's a guy who likes to make a point, sometimes can be a detriment, but just does a lot of things you want. And he made a ton of tackles for Missouri. He was the leading tackler of the last 2 years. He was second the year before. And he's got those super long arms, which at that position is just super valuable, having that broad shoulders and wide arms that help you with that. But like he's like a sandwich away from being heavier than JOK already. You don't need him to necessarily be a full-time linebacker. If he can get there, great. But getting a guy who can potentially be a fill-in as that D'Anthony Bell role, or maybe as a weak side linebacker or something in obvious passing situations. And then last but certainly not least, guys like Jalon Carlees are like prototypical special teams build. That 225 pounds with enough speed, enough willingness to go down the field. He's got experience in that role, as does DeCamrion Richardson, who's another guy which you can easily, like, I would hope he's on field goal block like yesterday. But like, we have a coaching staff and we have a special teams coordinator that seems to get a lot of these type of guys. And I think Jalon Carlees can sort of check a few boxes in terms of getting more athletic in the linebacker room, potentially, if he can do it. And then getting more special teams presence there, that I think at this area of the draft, betting on an athlete, even though you're a position switch, like he has tools you want to work with. Like I'm willing to take that type of swing on a player.
All right. Fantastic stuff, Pete. So if you want more detail than what was covered in this podcast, Pete was not short of words explaining his thought process around why he took guys, what made sense, and how they fit into the immediate needs the Browns have, perhaps, and then where they fit into the future of what the organization is looking to do as well. So two links you'll find, again, in the pod description, the link to Wide Left Football's top 300 board, and then the link directly to Pete's mock draft this week. Listen, we're going to have a lot of stuff, a Monday night show. Pete will be with me on that. We're going to have plenty of coverage over the next 2 days getting ready for round one. And then a reminder that myself and Pete will be all over the OBR's coverage Thursday, Friday, Saturday of the draft. So looking forward to providing analysis on everything the Browns decide to do in the NFL at large. So we appreciate your time, Pete. Thanks, man. All right, guys, that's a wrap for today's episode. Thanks for stopping by. Check in later in the day. You will find some more OBR content from the Twitch YouTube replay, which we do myself, Ian Valentino, Brad Ward, and then Pete Smith again get together to talk through some key questions going into the draft, some really good insights provided, and continue, like I said earlier, to go to the OBR for all your draft needs this week, and especially your draft coverage coming up, where the OBR will be live every day of the draft for every hour and every minute. So pumped about that. Thanks to you guys for stopping and making this podcast a part of your day, however that podcast finds your ears. We appreciate that very much, guys, as we always say. And rate and review if you can on the way out the door. Be well, everybody. Check in for more content coming around today, tomorrow, and the next. Again, thanks for being here. Go Browns.